Furious with his strength, rages uncontrollably. Trusting to Zeus. No fear of man or god, nothing. A powerful, rabid frenzy has him in its grip. Hector prays for the sacred dawn to break at once. He threatens to lop the high horns of our sterns and gut our ships with fire. And all our comrades, pinned against the hulls, panicked by thick smoke, he'll rout and kill in blood. A nightmare. I fear it with all my heart. I fear the gods will carry out his threats, and then it will be our fate to die in Troy, far from the stallion land of Argos. Up with you. Now, late as it is, if you want to pull out Argives, our hard-hit armies cleared of the Trojan onslaught. Fail us now? What a grief it will be to you through all the years to come. No remedy, no way to cure the damage once it's done. Come, while there is still time, think hard. How can you fight off the Argives' fatal day? Oh, old friend, surely your father Peleus urged you. That day he sent you out of Thyre to Agamemnon. My son, victory is what Athena and Hera will give, if they so choose. But you hold in check that proud, fiery spirit of yours inside your chest. Friendship is much better. Vicious quarrels are deadly. Put an end to them at once. Your Achaean comrades, young and old, will exalt you all the more. That was your aged father's parting advice. It must have slipped your mind. But now at last, stop, Achilles. Let your heart-devouring anger go. The king will hand you gifts to match his insults, if only you'll relent and end your anger. So come then. Listen, as I count out the gifts, the troves in his tents that Agamemnon vows to give you. 7 tripods, never touched by fire. 10 bars of gold. 20 burnished cauldrons. 12 massive stallions, racers who earned him trophies with their speed. He is no poor man who owns what they have won, not strapped for goods with all that lovely gold. What trophies those high-strung horses carried off for him. 7 women he'll give you, flawless, skilled in crafts, women of Lesbos. The ones he chose, his privilege, that day you captured the Lesbos citadel yourself. They outclass the tribes of women in their beauty. These he will give, and along with them will go the one he took away at first, Briseus's daughter, and he will swear a solemn, binding oath in the bargain. He never mounted her bed, never once made love with her. The natural thing, my lord, men and women joined. Now all these gifts will be handed you at once. But if, later, the gods allow us to plunder the great city of Priam, you shall enter in when we share the spoils. Load the holds of your ship with gold and bronze, as much as your heart desires, and choose for your pleasure 20 Trojan women, second only to Argive Helen in their glory. And then, if we can journey home to Achaean Argos, pride of the breasting earth, you'll be his son by marriage. He will even honour you on a par with his Orestes, full grown by now, reared in the lap of luxury. 3 daughters are his in his well-built halls, Chrysothemis, and Laodice, and Iphianassa. And you may lead away whichever one you like, with no bride price asked, home to Peleus's house. And he will add a dowry. Yes, a magnificent treasure, the likes of which no man has ever offered with his daughter. 7 citadels he will give you, filled with people. Cardamyle, Enope, and the grassy slopes of Hyre. Phere, the sacrosanct, and Thea, deep in meadows, rolling Ipia, and Petersus, green with vineyards, all face the sea at the far edge of sandy Pylos, and the men who live within them, rich in sheep flocks, rich in shambling cattle, will honour you like a god, with hordes of gifts, and beneath your sceptre's sway live out your laws in sleek and shining peace. All this he would extend to you if you will end your anger. But if you hate the son of Atreus all the more, him and his troves of gifts, at least take pity on all our united forces mauled in battle here. They will honour you like a god. Think of the glory you will gather in their eyes. Now you can kill Hector. Seized with murderous frenzy, certain there's not a single fighter his equal. No Achaean brought to Troy in the ships. Now, for once, you can meet the man head on. The famous runner Achilles rose to his challenge. Royal son of Laertes, Odysseus, great tactician. I must say what I have to say straight out. Must tell you how I feel, and how all this will end, so you won't crowd around me, one after another, coaxing like a murmuring clutch of doves. I hate that man like the very gates of death who says one thing but hides another in his heart. I will say it outright. That seems best to me. Will Agamemnon win me over? Not for all the world. I swear it. Nor will the rest of the Achaeans. No. What lasting thanks in the long run for warring without enemies, on and on, no end? One and the same lot for the man who hangs back and the man who battles hard. The same honour waits for the coward and the brave. They both go down to death, the fighter who shirks, the one who works to exhaustion. And what's laid up for me? What pittance? Nothing. And after suffering hardships, year in, year out, staking my life on the mortal risks of war, like a mother bird, hurrying morsels back to her wingless young ones, whatever she can catch, but it's all starvation wages for herself. So for me. Many a sleepless night I've bivouacked in harness. Day after bloody day I've hacked my passage through, fighting other soldiers to win their wives as prizes. 12 cities of men I've stormed and sacked from shipboard. 11 I claim by land on the fertile earth of Troy. And from all, I dragged off piles of splendid plunder, hauled it away, and always gave the lot to Agamemnon, that son of Atreus, always skulking behind the lines, safe in his fast ships. And he would take it all. He'd parcel out some scraps, but keep the lion's share. Some he'd hand to the lords and kings, prizes of honour, and they hold them still. From me alone, Achilles of all Achaeans, he seizes. He keeps the wife I love. Well, let him bed her now. Enjoy her to the hilt. Why must we battle Trojans, men of Argos? Why did he muster an army, lead us here, that son of Atreus? Why? Why in the world, if not for Helen, with her loose and lustrous hair? Are they the only men alive who love their wives, those sons of Atreus? Never. Any decent man, a man with sense, loves his own, cares for his own as deeply as I. I love that woman with all my heart, though I won her like a trophy with my spear. But now that he's torn my honour from my hands, robbed me, lied to me, don't let him try me now. I know him too well. He'll never win me over. No, Odysseus, let him rack his brains with you and the other captains how to fight the raging fire off the ships. Look, what a mighty piece of work he's done without me. Why, he's erected a rampart, driven a trench around it, broad, enormous, and planted stakes to guard it. No use. He still can't block the power of man-killing Hector. No, though as long as I fought on Achaea's lines, Hector had little lust to charge beyond his walls, never ventured beyond the Scaean gates and oak tree. There he stood up to me alone one day, and barely escaped my onslaught. Ah, but now, since I have no desire to battle glorious Hector, tomorrow at daybreak, once I have sacrificed to Zeus and all the gods, and loaded up my holds, and launched out on the breakers, watch, my friend. If you'll take the time and care to see me off, and you will see my squadron sail at dawn, fanning out on the Hellespont that swarms with fish, my crews manning the oarlocks, rowing out with a will. And if the famed god of the earthquake grants us safe passage, the third day out we raise the dark, rich soil of Thyre. There lies my wealth, hordes of it. All I left behind when I sailed to Troy on this insane voyage. And still more hordes from here. Gold, ruddy bronze, women sashed and lovely, and gleaming grey iron, and I will haul it home, all I won as plunder, all but my prize of honour. He who gave that prize has snatched it back again. What outrage! That high and mighty King Agamemnon, that son of Atreus! Go back and tell him all. All, I say. Out in the open, too, so other Achaeans can wheel on him in anger if he still hopes, who knows, to deceive some other comrade. Shameless. Inveterate. Armoured in shamelessness. Dog that he is, he'd never dare look me straight in the eyes again. No, I'll never set heads together with that man. No planning in common. No taking common action. He cheated me. Did me damage, wrong. But never again. He'll never rob me blind with his twisting words again. Once is enough for him. Die and be damned, for all I care. Zeus, who rules the world, has ripped his wits away. His gifts, I loathe his gifts. I wouldn't give you a splinter for that man. Not if he gave me 10 times as much, 20 times over. All he possesses now, and all that could pour in from the world's end, not all the wealth that's freighted into Orchomenus, even into Thebes, Egyptian Thebes, where the houses overflow with the greatest troves of treasure. Thebes, with 100 gates, and through each gate battalions, 200 fighters surge to war with teams and chariots. No, not if his gifts outnumbered all the grains of sand and dust in the earth. No, not even then could Agamemnon bring my fighting spirit round until he pays me back, pays full measure for all his heart-breaking outrage. His daughter? I will marry no daughter of Agamemnon. Not if she rivaled Aphrodite in all her golden glory. Not if she matched the crafts of clear-eyed Athena. Not even then would I make her my wife. No. Let her father pitch on some other Argive. One who can please him, a greater king than I. If the gods pull me through and I reach home alive, Peleus needs no help to fetch a bride for me himself. Plenty of Argive women wait in Hellas and in Phaia, daughters of lords who rule their citadels in power. Whomever I want, I'll make my cherished wife at home. Time and again my fiery spirit drove me to win a wife, a fine partner to please my heart, to enjoy with her the treasures my old father Peleus piled high. I say no wealth is worth my life. Not all they claim was stored in the depths of Troy, that city built on riches, in the old days of peace before the sons of Achaea came. Not all the gold held fast in the archer's rocky vaults, in Phoebus Apollo's house on Pytho's sheer cliffs. Cattle and fat sheep can all be had for the raiding, tripods all for the trading, and tawny-headed stallions. But a man's life breath cannot come back again. No raiders in force, no trading brings it back. Once it slips through a man's clenched teeth. Mother tells me, the immortal goddess Thetis with her glistening feet, that 2 fates bear me on to the day of death. If I hold out here, and I lay siege to Troy, my journey home is gone, but my glory never dies. If I voyage back to the fatherland I love, my pride, my glory, dies. True. But the life that's left me will be long. The stroke of death will not come on me quickly. One thing more. To the rest, I'd pass on this advice. Sail home now. You will never set your eyes on the day of doom that topples looming Troy. Thundering Zeus has spread his hands above her. Her armies have taken heart. So you go back to the great men of Achaea. You report my message. Since this is the privilege of senior chiefs, let them work out a better plan of action. Use their imaginations now to save the ships, and Achaea's armies pressed to their hollow hulls. This maneuver will never work for them. This scheme they hatch for the moment as I raged on and on. But Phoenix can stay, and rest the night with us, so he can voyage home, home in the ships with me to the fatherland we love. Tomorrow at dawn. But only if Phoenix wishes. I will never force the man to go. He stopped. A stunned silence seized them all. struck dumb. Achilles' ringing denials overwhelmed them so. At last, Phoenix, the old charioteer, spoke out. He burst into tears, terrified for Achaea's fleet.
"Sail home? Is that what you're turning over in your mind, my glorious one, Achilles? Have you no heart at all to fight the gutting fire from the fast trim ships? The spirit inside you overpowered by anger. How could I be severed from you, dear boy? Left behind on the beachhead here, alone? The old horseman, Peleus, had me escort you. That day he sent you out of Thyre to Agamemnon. A youngster, still untrained for the great leveller of war, still green at debate, where men can make their mark. So he dispatched me, to teach you all these things, to make you a man of words and a man of action, too. Cut off from you with a charge like that, dear boy. I have no heart to be left behind, not even if Zeus himself would swear to scrape away the scurf of age and make me young again, as fresh as I was that time I first set out from Hellas, where the women are a wonder, fleeing a blood feud with my father Amyntor, Ormenus's son. How furious father was with me, over his mistress with her dark glistening hair. How he would dote on her, and spurn his wedded wife, my own mother. And time and again she begged me, hugging my knees, to bed my father's mistress down, and kill the young girl's taste for an old man. Mother, I did your bidding, did my work. But father, suspecting at once, cursed me roundly. He screamed out to the cruel Furies, "Never, never let me bounce on my knees a son of his, sprung of his loins." And the gods drove home that curse, mighty Zeus of the underworld and grim Persephone. So I took it into my head to lay him low with sharp bronze. But a god checked my anger. He warned me of what the whole realm would say, the loose talk of the people, rough slurs of men. They must not call me a father-killer, our Achaeans. Then nothing could keep me there, my blood so fired up. No more strolling about the halls with father raging. But there was a crowd of kin and cousins round me, holding me in the house, begging me to stay. They butchered plenty of fat sheep, banquet fare, and shambling crook-horned cattle, droves of pigs, succulent, rich with fat. They singed the bristles, splaying the porkers out across Hephaestus's fire. Then wine from the old man's jars, all we could drink. 9 nights they passed the hours, hovering over me, keeping the watch by rounds. The fires never died, one ablaze in the colonnade of the walled court, one in the porch outside my bedroom doors. But then, when the 10th night came on me, black as pitch, I burst the doors of the chamber, bolted tight, and out I rushed. I leapt the walls at a bound, giving the slip to guards and women servants, and away I fled, through the whole expanse of Hellas, and gaining the good dark soil of Thyre, mother of flocks, I reached the king. And Peleus gave me a royal welcome. Peleus loved me, as a father loves a son, I tell you, his only child, the heir to his boundless wealth. He made me a rich man. He gave me throngs of subjects. I ruled the Dolopes, settling down on Thyre's west frontier. And I made you what you are, strong as the gods, Achilles. I loved you from the heart. You'd never go with another to banquet on the town, or feast in your own halls. Never, until I'd sat you down on my knees and cut you the first bits of meat, remember? You'd eat your fill, I'd hold the cup to your lips, and all too often you soaked the shirt on my chest, spitting up some wine. A baby's way. A misery. Oh, I had my share of troubles for you, Achilles, did my share of labour. Brooding. Never forgetting the gods would bring no son of mine to birth, not from my own loins. So you, Achilles, great godlike Achilles, I made you, my son. I tried, so some day you might fight disaster off my back. But now, Achilles, beat down your mounting fury. It's wrong to have such an iron, ruthless heart. Even the gods themselves can bend and change,
and theirs is the greater power, honour, strength. Even the gods, I say, with incense, soothing vows, with full cups poured and the deep smoky savour, men can bring them round, begging for pardon when one oversteps the mark, does something wrong. We do have prayers, you know, prayers for forgiveness, daughters of mighty Zeus. And they limp and halt, they're all wrinkled, drawn, they squint to the side, can't look you in the eyes, and always bent on duty, trudging after ruin, maddening, blinding ruin. But ruin is strong and swift. She outstrips them all by far, stealing a march, leaping over the whole wide earth to bring mankind to grief. And the prayers trail after, trying to heal the wounds. And then, if a man reveres these daughters of Zeus as they draw near him, they will help him greatly and listen to his appeals. But if one denies them, turns them away, stiff-necked and harsh, off they go to the son of Cronos, Zeus, and pray that ruin will strike the man down, crazed and blinded until he's paid the price.
Relent, Achilles, you too. See that honour attend these good daughters of Zeus, honour that sways the minds of others, even heroes. If Agamemnon were not holding out such gifts, with talk of more to come, that son of Atreus, if the warlord kept on blustering in his anger, why, I'd be the last to tell you, cast your rage to the winds, defend your friends, despite their desperate straits. But now look. He gives you a trove of treasures right away, and vows there are more to follow. He sends the bravest captains to implore you, leaders picked from the whole Achaean army, comrades in arms that you love most yourself. Don't dismiss their appeal, their expedition here. Though no one could blame your anger, not before. So it was in the old days, too. So we've heard in the famous deeds of fighting men, of heroes, when seething anger would overcome the great ones. Still, you could bring them round with gifts and winning words. There's an old tale, I remember, an ancient exploit, nothing recent, but this is how it went. We're all friends here. Let me tell it now. The Corites were fighting the combat-hard Aetolians, armies ringing Calydon, slaughtering each other, Aetolians defending their city's handsome walls, and Corites primed to lay them waste in battle. It all began when Artemis, throned in gold, loosed a disaster on them. Incensed that Aeneas offered her no first fruits, his orchard's crowning glory. The rest of the gods had feasted full on oxen, true, but the huntress alone, almighty Zeus's daughter, Aeneas gave her nothing. It slipped his mind, or he failed to care. But what a fatal error! How she fumed, Zeus's child who showers arrows! She loosed a bristling wild boar, his tusks gleaming, crashing his savage, monstrous way through Aeneas's orchard, ripping up whole trunks from the earth to pitch them headlong, rows of them, roots and all, apple blossoms and all. But the son of Aeneas, Meleager, cut him down, mustering hunters out of a dozen cities, packs of hounds as well. No slim band of men could ever finish him off, that rippling killer. He stacked so many men atop the tear-soaked pyre. But over his body the goddess raised a terrific din, a war for the prize, the huge beast's head and shaggy hide. Corites locked to the death with brave Aetolians. Now, so long as the battle-hungry Meleager fought, it was deadly going for the Corites, no hope of holding their ground outside their own city walls, despite superior numbers. But then, when the wrath came sweeping over the man, the same anger that swells the chests of others, for all their care and self-control, then, heart enraged at his own dear mother, Althea, Meleager kept to his bed, beside his wedded wife, Cleopatra. That great beauty, remember her? The daughter of trim-heeled Marpessa,
Eunice's child, and her husband, Idas, strongest man of the men who once walked the earth. He even braved Apollo. He drew his bow at the archer. All for Marpessa, the girl with lovely ankles. There, in the halls, her father and mother always called Cleopatra Halcyon, after the seabird's name. Grieving once for her own fate, her mother had raised the Halcyon's thin, painful cry, wailing that Lord Apollo, the distant, deadly archer, had whisked her far from Idas. Meleager's Cleopatra, she was the one he lay beside those days, brooding over his heart-breaking anger. He was enraged by the curses of his mother, volleys of curses she called down from the gods. So racked with grief for her brother he had killed, she kept pounding fists on the earth that feeds us all, kept crying out to the god of death and grim Persephone, flung herself on the ground, tears streaking her robes, and she screamed out, "Kill, Meleager, kill my son!" And out of the world of darkness a fury heard her cries, stalking the night with a fury's brutal heart, and suddenly thunder breaking around the gates, the roar of enemies, towers battered under assault. And Aetolia's elders begged Meleager, sent high priests of the gods, pleading, "Come out now, defend your people now." And they vowed a princely gift. Wherever the richest land of green Calydon lay, there they urged him to choose a grand estate, full 50 acres, half of it turned to vineyards, half to open ploughland, and carve it from the plain. And over the old horseman Aeneas begged him. He took a stand at the bolted chamber's threshold, shaking the bolted doors, begging his own son. Over and over his brothers and noble mother implored him. He refused them all the more. And troops of comrades, devoted, dearest friends, not even they could bring his fighting spirit round, until, at last, rocks were raining down on the chamber. Corytes about to mount the towers and torch the great city. And then, finally, Meleager's bride, beautiful Cleopatra, begged him, streaming tears, recounting all the griefs that fall to people whose cities seized and plundered, the men slaughtered, citadel burned to rubble, enemies dragging the children, raping the sashed and lovely women. How his spirit leapt when he heard those horrors! And buckling his gleaming arm around his body, out he rushed to war. And so he saved them all from the fatal day. He gave way to his own feelings, but too late. No longer would they make good the gifts, those troves of gifts, to warm his heart. And even so he beat off that disaster, empty-handed. But you wipe such thoughts from your mind. Don't let your spirit turn you down that path, dear boy. Harder to save the warships once they're up in flames. Now, while the gifts still wait, go out and fight. Go, the Achaeans all will honour you like a god. But enter this man-killing war without the gifts. Your fame will flag, no longer the same honour, even though you hurl the Trojans home. But the swift-runner Achilles answered firmly, "Phoenix, old father, bred and loved by the gods, what do I need with honour such as that? I say my honour lies in the great decree of Zeus. That gift will hold me here by the beaked ships as long as the life-breath remains inside my chest, and my springing knees will lift me. Another thing, take it to heart, I urge you. Stop confusing my fixed resolve with this weeping and wailing just to serve his pleasure, Atreus's mighty son. It degrades you to curry favour with that man. And I will hate you for it, I who love you. It does you proud to stand by me, my friend, to attack the man who attacks me. Be a king on a par with me. Take half my honours. These men will carry their message back, but you stay here, and spend the night in a soft bed. Then tomorrow, at first light, we will decide whether we sail home or hold out here. With that, he gave Patroclus a sharp glance, a quiet nod, to pile the bedding deep for Phoenix now, a sign to the rest to think of leaving quickly. Giant Ajax rose to his feet, the son of Telamon, tall as a god, turned and broke his silence.
"Ready, Odysseus? Royal son of Laertes, great tactician. Come, home we go now. There's no achieving our mission here, I see, not with this approach. Best to return at once, give the Achaeans a full report, defeating as it is. They must be sitting there waiting for us now. Achilles, he's made his own proud spirit so wild in his chest, so savage, not a thought for his comrade's love. We honoured him past all others by the ships. Hard, ruthless man. Why, any man will accept the blood price paid for a brother murdered, a child done to death. And the murderer lives on in his own country. The man has paid enough, and the injured kinsman curbs his pride, his smouldering, vengeful spirit, once he takes the price. You! The gods have planted a cruel, relentless fury in your chest. All for a girl, just one. And here we offer you seven. Outstanding beauties. That, and a treasure trove besides. Achilles, put some human kindness in your heart. Show respect for your own house. Here we are, under your roof, sent from the whole Achaean force. Past all other men, all other Achaean comrades, we long to be your closest, dearest friends.
And the swift runner Achilles answered warmly, Ajax, royal son of Telamon, captain of armies, all well said, after my own heart, or mostly so. But my heart still heaves with rage whenever I call to mind that arrogance of his, how he mortified me, right in front of the Argives, that son of Atreus, treating me like some vagabond, like some outcast stripped of all my rights. You go back to him and declare my message. I will not think of arming for bloody war again, not till the son of wise King Priam, dazzling Hector, batters all the way to the Myrmidon ships and shelters, slaughtering Argives, gutting the hulls with fire. But round my own black ship and camp, this Hector will be stopped, I trust, blazing for battle as he goes, stopped dead in his tracks. So he finished. Then each man, lifting his own two-handled cup, poured it out to the gods, and back they went along the ships, Odysseus in the lead. Patroclus told his friends and serving women to pile a deep warm bed for Phoenix quickly. They obeyed, and spread the bed as he ordered, with fleeces, woolen throws and soft linen sheets. There the old man lay, awaiting shining dawn. And deep in his well-built lodge, Achilles slept with the woman he brought from Lesbos, Phorbas's daughter Diomede, in all her beauty sleeping by his side. And over across from him Patroclus slept, with the sashed and lovely Iphis by his side, whom Prince Achilles gave him the day he took the heights of Scyros, Enaeus's rocky stronghold. But once the envoys reached Atreides' shelters, comrades leapt to their feet, welcomed them back, and clustering round them lifted golden cups. One after another pressed them with questions. King Agamemnon, most urgent of all.
Come, tell me, famous Odysseus, Achaea's pride and glory, will he fight the fire off the ships? Or does he refuse? Does rage still grip his proud, mighty spirit?
And the steady, long-enduring Odysseus replied,
Great Marshal Atreides, Lord of Men Agamemnon, that man has no intention of quenching his rage. He's still bursting with anger, more than ever. He spurns you, spurns all your gifts. Work out your own defense, he says. You and your captains save the Argive armies and the ships. Himself? Achilles threatens, tomorrow at first light, to haul his well-benched warships out to sea. And what's more, he advises all the rest, sail home now. You will never set your eyes on the day of doom that topples looming Troy. Thundering Zeus has spread his hands above her. Her armies have taken heart. That's his answer. And here are men to confirm it, fellow envoys. Ajax and two heralds, both clear-headed men. But old Phoenix passes the night in camp, as Achilles bids him, so he can voyage home, home in the ships with him to the fatherland they love, tomorrow at dawn. But only if Phoenix wishes, He will never force the man to go.
So he reported. Silence held them all, struck dumb by his story. Odysseus's words still ringing in their ears. A long while they said nothing. Spirits dashed. Finally, Diomedes, lord of the war cry, broke forth.
Great Marshal Atrides, lord of men Agamemnon, if only you'd never begged the dauntless son of Peleus. Holding out to Achilles trove on trove of gifts, he's a proud man at the best of times, and now you've only plunged him deeper in his pride. I say have done with the man, whether he sails for home or stays on here. He'll fight again in his own good time, whenever the courage in him flares and a god fires his blood. So come, follow my orders, and all of us unite. Go to sleep now, full to your heart's content with food and wine, a soldier's strength and nerve. Then, when the dawn's red fingers shine in all their glory, quickly deploy your chariots and battalions, Agamemnon, out in front of the ships. You spur them on, and you yourself, you fight in the front ranks. And Achaea's kings all shouted their assent, stirred by the stallion-breaking Diomedes' challenge. Pouring cups to the gods, each warlord sought his shelter. There they spent the night, and took the gift of sleep.
Now dawn rose up from bed, bringing light to immortal gods and mortal men. King Agamemnon, in his hour of glory, spurred the Achaeans into battle. At first they achieved success, pushing the Trojans back to the city walls. But suddenly, Agamemnon took a wound, and Hector, seeing him speeding off the lines, took the offensive, rallying the Trojans on, pushing the Argives back. First Diomedes, then Odysseus, then the brave warrior Eurypylus were wounded and all withdrew from battle. Then Nestor saw the expert healer Machaon wounded on the field, and the noble old horseman, mounting his chariot with Machaon beside him, lashed his team, and on they flew to the ships, holding nothing back. Now only great Ajax remained to lead the Argive forces, fighting to hold the Trojans off the ships. But in the wake of the ferocious Trojan onslaught, he slowly drew back from the front, fearing the worst for Achaea's waiting ships.
So on they fought, like a mass of swirling fire, as Neleus's foaming mares bore Nestor clear of battle, and bore Machaon, the expert healer, too. But now the brilliant runner Achilles watched and marked him. There he stood on the stern of his looming, hollow hull, looking out over the uphill work and heartsick rout of war. He called at once to his friend-in-arms, Patroclus, shouting down from the decks. Hearing Achilles, forth he came from his shelter, striding up like the deathless god of war. But from that moment on, his doom was sealed. The brave son of Menoetius spoke out first. "Why do you call, Achilles? Do you need me?" And the swift runner Achilles answered quickly, "Son of Menoetius, soldier after my own heart, now I think they will grovel at my knees, our Achaean comrades begging for their lives. The need has reached them, a need too much to bear. Go now, Patroclus, dear to Zeus, and question Nestor. Who's that wounded man he's bringing in from the fighting? He looks to me like Machaon from behind. Clearly, Machaon, head to foot, Asclepius's only son. But I never saw his eyes. The team sped by me, tearing on full tilt." Patroclus obeyed his great friend, and off at a run he went along the ships and shelters. Now, as soon as the others reached Nestor's tent, they climbed down on the earth that feeds us all. The driver, Eurymedon, freed the old man's team. The men themselves dried off their sweat-soaked shirts, standing against the wind that whipped along the surf, then entered the tent and took their seats on settles. And welcomed Hecamede mixed them a bracing drink, the woman that old King Nestor won from Tenedos when Achilles stormed it, proud Arsinoe's daughter, the prize the Achaeans chose to give to Nestor because he excelled them all at battle tactics. First Hecamede pushed a table up towards them, handsome, sanded smooth, with blue enamel legs, and on it she set a basket,
braided in bronze with onions in it, a relish for the drink, and pale gold honey along with barley meal, the grain's blessed yield. And there in the midst, the grand, glowing cup the old king brought from home, studded with golden nails, fitted with handles, four all told, and two doves perched on each, heads bending to drink, and made of solid gold, and twin supports ran down to form the base. An average man would strain to lift it off the table when it was full, but Nestor, old as he was, could hoist it up with ease. In this cup the woman, skilled as a goddess, mixed them a strong drink with Pramnian wine. Over it shredded goat cheese with a bronze grater, and scattered barley into it, glistening pure white, then invited them to drink when she had mulled it all. Now as the two men drank their parching thirst away, and had just begun to please themselves with talk, confiding back and forth, there stood Patroclus, tall at the threshold, vivid as a god. Old Nestor saw him at once, and started up from his polished chair, warmly grasped his hand, and led Patroclus in, pressing him to sit. But standing off to the side, his guest declined. "No time to sit, old soldier, dear to the gods. You won't persuade me. Awesome and quick to anger, the man who sent me here to find out who's been wounded, the one you've just brought in. But I can see him. I recognize Machaon myself, the expert healer. So back I go to give Achilles the message. Well, you know, old soldier loved by the gods, what sort of man he is, that great and terrible man. Why, he'd leap to accuse a friend without a fault." But Nestor, the noble charioteer, replied at length, "Now, why is Achilles so cast down with grief for this or that Achaean winged by a stray shaft? He has no idea of the anguish risen through the army. Look, our finest champions laid up in the ships, all hit by arrows or run through by spears. There's powerful Diomedes, brought down by an archer. Odysseus wounded, and Agamemnon, too, the famous spearman. And Eurypylus took a shaft in the thigh, and here Machaon. I just brought him in from the fighting, struck down by an arrow whizzing off the string. But Achilles, brave as he is, he has no care, no pity for our Achaeans. How long will he wait? Till our ships that line the shore go up in flames, gutted despite a last-ditch stand, and we ourselves are mowed down in droves. This Achilles, he'll reap the rewards of that great courage of his alone, I tell you. Weep his heart out far too late, when our troops are dead and gone. My friend, remember your father's last commands. That day he sent you out of Thyre to Agamemnon. We were both there inside, I and Prince Odysseus. Heard it all in the halls, all your father told you. We'd come to the strong and storied house of Peleus, out for recruits across Achaea's good green land. There, inside, we found the old soldier Menoetius. Found you, too, and Achilles close beside you, and the old horseman Peleus tending, burning the fat thighs of an ox to thundering Zeus, deep in the walled enclosure of his court. He was lifting a golden cup and pouring wine, glistening wine, to go with the glowing victim. You two were busy over the carcass, carving meat, when we both appeared and stood at the broad doors. Achilles sprang to his feet. He seemed startled, clasped the two of us by the hand and led us in. He pressed us to take a seat, and set before us sumptuous stranger's fare, the stranger's right. And once we'd had our fill of food and drink, I led off with our plan, inviting the two of you to come campaign with us. How willing you were! And your fathers filled your ears with marching orders, the old horseman Peleus urging his son Achilles, "Now, always be the best, my boy, the bravest, and hold your head up high above the others." And Actor's son, Menoetius, urging you, "My child, Achilles is nobler than you with his immortal blood, but you are older. He has more power than you by far, but give him sound advice,
guide him, even in battle. Achilles will listen to you, for his own good. So the old man told you. You've forgotten. But even now, late as it is, you could tell your Achilles all this, and your fiery friend might listen. Who knows? With the gods' help, you just might rouse him now, bring his fighting spirit round at last. The persuasion of a comrade has its powers. But if, down deep, some prophecy makes him balk, some doom his noble mother revealed to him from Zeus, at least let Achilles send Patroclus into battle. Let the whole Myrmidon army follow your command. You might bring some light of victory to our Argives. And let him give you his own fine armour to wear in war, so the Trojans might take you for him, Patroclus. Yes, hold off from attack, and Achaea's fighting sons get second wind, exhausted as they are. Breathing room in war is all too brief. You're fresh, unbroken. They're bone-weary from battle. You could roll those broken Trojans back to Troy, clear of our ships and shelters. So old Nestor urged, and the fighting spirit leapt inside Patroclus. He dashed back by the ships towards Achilles, but sprinting close to King Odysseus's fleet, where the Argives met and handed down their laws, the grounds where they built their altars to the gods, there he met Eurypylus, Eumaeon's gallant son, wounded, the arrow planted deep in his thigh and limping out of battle. The sweat was streaming down his face and back, and the dark blood still flowed from his ugly wound. But the man's will was firm. He never broke his stride. And moved at the sight, the good soldier Patroclus burst out in grief with a flight of winging words. "Poor men, lords of the Argives, oh, my captains, how doomed you are! Look, far from your loved ones and native land, to glut with your shining fat the wild dogs of battle here in Troy. But come, tell me, Eurypylus, royal fighter, can the Achaeans somehow still hold monstrous Hector? Or must they all die now, beaten down by his spear?" Struggling with his wound, Eurypylus answered, "No hope, Patroclus, prince, no bulwark left. They'll all be hurled back to the black ships. All of them, all our best in the old campaigns, are laid up in the hulls. They're hit by arrows, pierced by spears, brought down by Trojan hands, while the Trojans' power keeps on rising, rising. Save me, at least. Take me back to my black ship. Cut this shaft from my thigh, and the dark blood wash it out of the wound with clear, warm water, and spread the soothing, healing salves across it, the powerful drugs, they say, you learned from Achilles, and Chiron, the most humane of centaurs, taught your friend. And as for our own healers, Podalirius and Machaon, one is back in the shelters, wounded, I think. Machaon needs a good strong healer himself. He's racked with pain. The other's still afield, standing up to the Trojans' slashing onslaught." The brave son of Menoetius answered quickly,
"Impossible! Eurypylus, hero, what shall we do? I am on my way with a message for Achilles, our great man of war. The plan that Nestor, Achaea's watch and ward, urged me to report. But I won't neglect you, even so, with such a wound."
And bracing the captain, arm around his waist, he helped him toward his shelter. An aide saw them and put some oxhides down. Patroclus stretched him out, knelt with a knife, and cut the sharp, stabbing arrow out of Eurypylus's thigh, and washed the wound clean of the dark running blood with clear, warm water. Pounding it in his palms, he crushed a bitter root, and covered over the gash to kill his comrade's pain, a cure that fought off every kind of pain, and the wound dried, and the flowing blood stopped.
And so, under shelter now, Menoetius's fighting son was healing Eurypylus's wounds. But hordes of men fought on, the Achaean and Trojan infantry going hand to hand. The war, the deafening crash of battle, blazed around the strong-built wall, and rampart timbers thundered under the heavy blows as Argive fighters, beaten down by the lash of Zeus, were rolled back, pinned to their beaked ships in dread of Hector, that invincible headlong terror. But now the Argives closed ranks, packed tight behind the wall, and a desperate battle flared between both armies. Everywhere, rocks, ramparts, breastworks swam with the blood of Trojans, Argives, both sides. But still the Trojans could not rout the Argives. At last Zeus gave Hector the greater glory, the first to storm the wall. And now Hector grappled a huge boulder made light by Zeus, raised it up and hurled it against the wall's powerful gates. The boulder crashed through and Hector leapt in after. Whirling round, he cried to his Trojans, "The wall! Storm the wall!" They rushed to obey him, some swarming over the top at once, others streaming in through the sturdy gateways, Argives scattering back in terror, back by the hollow hulls, the uproar rising, no way out, no end. But once Zeus had driven Hector and Hector's Trojans hard against the ships, he left both armies there and went to rest on the craggy slopes of Mount Ida, turning his shining eyes toward the north. He never dreamed that a single deathless god would go to war for Troy's or Achaea's forces now. But Poseidon, the mighty god of earthquakes, was not blind. He pitied the Argives beaten down by Trojan troops, and his churning outrage rose against the father. Off he strode to the Achaeans' vast encampment, where the Trojans stormed like flames. He rallied the defenders now, planting enormous martial power in each Achaean's heart to urge the battle on, to fight and never flinch.
Now Hera, poised on her golden throne, looked down, stationed high at her post aloft Olympus's peak. At once she saw the Sea Lord blustering strong in the war where men win glory, her own brother, and husband's brother too, and her heart raced with joy. But then she saw great Zeus at rest on the ridge, and the craggy heights of Ida gushing cold springs, and her heart filled with loathing. What could she do? Queen Hera wondered, her eyes glowing wide. How could she outmaneuver Zeus, the mastermind, this Zeus with his battle shield of storm and thunder? At last, one strategy struck her mind as best. She would dress in all her glory and go to Ida. Perhaps the old desire would overwhelm the king, to lie by her naked body and make immortal love, and she might drift an oblivious, soft warm sleep across his eyes, and numb that seething brain. So off she went to her room, the chamber her loving son Hephaestus built her, hanging the doors from doorposts snug and tight, locked with a secret bolt no other god could draw. She slipped in, closing the polished doors behind her. The ambrosia first. Hera cleansed her enticing body of any blemish. Then she applied a deep olive rub, the breathtaking, redolent oil she kept beside her. One stir of the scent in the bronze-floored halls of Zeus, and a perfumed cloud would drift from heaven down to earth. Kneading her skin with this to a soft glow, and combing her hair, she twisted her braids with expert hands, and sleek, luxurious, shining down from her deathless head they fell, cascading. Then, round her shoulders, she swirled the wondrous robes that Athena wove her, brushed out to a high gloss, and worked into the weft an elegant rose brocade. She pinned them across her breasts with a golden brooch, then sashed her waist with a waistband floating 100 tassels, and into her earlobes, neatly pierced, she quickly looped her earrings, ripe mulberry clusters dangling in triple drops, and the silver glints they cast could catch the heart. Then, back over her brow, she draped her headdress, fine fresh veils for Hera, the queen of gods, their pale, glimmering sheen like a rising sun, and under her smooth feet she fastened supple sandals. Now, dazzling in all her rich regalia, head to foot, out of her room she strode, and beckoned Aphrodite away from the other gods, and whispered, "Dear child,
Would you do me a favour, whatever I might ask? Or would you refuse me? Always fuming against me because I defend the Argives, you the Trojans?
Aphrodite, the daughter of Zeus, replied at once,
Hera, queen of the skies, daughter of mighty Cronos, tell me what's on your mind. I am eager to do it. Whatever I can do, whatever can be done.
Quick with treachery, noble Hera answered,
Give me love. Give me longing now. The powers you use to overwhelm all gods and mortal men. I am off to the ends of the fruitful, teeming earth to visit Ocean, fountainhead of the gods, and Mother Tethys, who nourished me in their halls and reared me well. They received me from Rhea, when thundering Zeus drove Cronus under the earth and the barren salt sea. I go to visit them and dissolve their endless feud. How long they have held back from each other now, from making love, since anger struck their hearts. But if words of mine could lure them back to love, back to bed, to lock in each other's arms once more, they would call me their honoured, loving friend for ever.
Aphrodite, smiling her everlasting smile, replied,
Impossible! Worse, it's wrong to deny your warm request, since you are the one who lies in the arms of mighty Zeus.
With that, she loosed from her breasts the breastband, pierced and alluring, with every kind of enchantment woven through it. There is the heat of love, the pulsing rush of longing, the lover's whisper, irresistible. Magic to make the sanest man go mad. And thrusting it into Hera's outstretched hands, she breathed her name in a throbbing, rising voice.
Here now, take this band, put it between your breasts, ravishing open work, and the world lies in its weaving. You won't return, I know, your mission unfulfilled, whatever your eager heart desires to do.
Hera broke into smiles now, her eyes wide. With a smile, she tucked the band between her breasts. And Aphrodite, the daughter of Zeus, went home. But Hera sped in a flash from Mount Olympus's peak, and crossing Pieria's coast, and lovely Emathia, rushed on, over the Thracian riders' snowy ridges, sweeping the highest summits, feet never touching the earth, and east of Athos, skimmed the billowing, foaming sea, and touched down on Lemnos, imperial Thoas's city. There she fell in with Sleep, twin brother of Death, clung to his hand, and urged him, called his name.
Sleep, master of all gods and all mortal men, if you ever listened to me in the old days, do what I ask you now, and you shall have my everlasting thanks. Put Zeus to sleep for me.